Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories. This podcast contains topics that may not be suitable for listeners under the age of 18. This includes things like domestic violence, sexual assault, and sexuality. They are intended to be educational in nature, but either way, a trigger warning is in place. Listener discretion is advised.
He wanted the full experience. For him, it really didn't matter if it was a guy or a girl. He just wanted that, just to be restrained, to be completely helpless, and to have tickling flow through his body, to have that release, to have that sensation put over there. And it was a beautiful cock to edge too. It was one of those like drag, like seeing it fully hard, dragging a feather over the shaft. It's like, nah, this is great. This is fantastic. Like it really made me fall in love with cock more than I already had. Sliding up pussy is a homicide. But the sliding up pussy is a homicide.
Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories, the podcast where we spill the tea on sex and dating. I'm Demi Wilde, your resident sexual deviant. Today, I have a very, very extra special guest deviant. I have author of the book, How to Be a Foot Pig, James Middak. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to see you. I'm so excited that we get to have this conversation.
At long last.
But can you let my listeners know a little bit about you?
I've been writing in the kink space for over a decade now, which is something that's really weird to think about for some time. It started out, as I think most things do when you're really, really high and horny, and just writing stuff. I think for the longest time, I feel like I'm not to give away my age, but I grew up in the era of like Yahoo groups and things like that. Like when you were
Yahoo groups.
Yeah. Like is that thing where you would just connect with people online through there, like some of the earliest iterations before there was even Facebook, before anything else like that, of just how could you explore kink in a safe place or at least find other people online. The issue of dial-up modems, downloading JPEGs and whatnot. I don't sound that old, but that's some of the shit you had to deal with back in the day. Right. And so finding kink through there was kind of the thing that helped me find my sexuality too. And the realization too that writing could be hot. And I think it's such a weird thing to say and state, but there's so many different times of stimuli that people look for in pornography. And I think we've all been there at some point or another, whether it's fanfic or anything else of just like regular stories. A hot story can get you bothered more than almost any other porn video possibly could. And it's that philosophy of sometimes you it'd be the kink you want to see in the world. And when I realized that, like, I could write stories and I could post them on forums and got, like, pretty good responses out of it, I'm like, oh, wow, someone on a forum once said, like, hey, you should put these into a book. And I'm like, haha, that's so funny. But then, oh, wait a second. And I did. I put out a book, which was really weird, signed to a very, very small publisher for my first two before I went independent. And my goodness, after a while, it kind of turns into a thing where it's just... it's something that you're known for. When people meet you, they're like, oh my God, I've read your stuff for years. I know who you are. And it's a very weird and bizarre and strange thing to deal with. But I'm on the socials and whatnot. I try not to think of myself in any sort of highfalutin terms or anything, but the people seem to know who I am in certain kink spaces. And that's great. And I'm happy to meet them.
You know, it's actually very funny. And I was telling you a little bit before this, but like I had a weird feeling like before we got into this. And I was like, I've read not the book itself, but like I've seen photos of this book. And then I think you followed me on Twitter recently. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's something about this person. Like I've literally like I don't know, no idea what it is, but like I know I've seen these books on the internet. I've seen them somewhere. Someone has talked to me about them at one point, and I go, what the hell? I need to talk to this person.
Right. Well, and the thing is, you are a published author yourself, albeit in a slightly different form and format. But I mean, you know, it's that thing where I realized a long time ago when I set up like a kink Twitter account, I'm like, wow, I got a following of 2,000 people on there. How about that? Ain't that something? But then back in the Tumblr days, again, aging, when I had like over 10,000 followers, it's like, wow, I can actually like just advertise through this massive network fairly quickly and get like a responses on here. But then the people who are on Tumblr aren't the same people on Twitter. The people who are on Twitter aren't the same people on Instagram. And like the more you spread out your kind of, you know, so long as you're, you know, being appropriate, not just fully copy pasting your content, the more reach you have. And honestly, just publishing books alone, there are some people who you will never meet through socials, who you will never know even purchased your books, that have your books and have read them and ingested them. And it's a very strange experience to connect people through all these things. But ultimately, people are connecting through what you've written, which I don't know how it was when you put out your first book, but to get like any sort of response, much less from a response not from a friend or a person that you know, just a complete out of nowhere stranger, it's a very strange, wonderful, but odd feeling.
I had that experience actually just recently. I think maybe like 6 months ago or something. I had this random DM from this kid who somehow stumbled upon one of my poetry books and was just like, I absolutely love this. I love your affirmations. I'm looking forward to using them in my day-to-day life. And I was like, let me like this long message. I was like, this is like the greatest feeling in the world. That like I read I reach some random stranger in some weird cosmic way, but like it happened and it's truly amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. But your books, I mean, and it, you know, we could talk a little bit more about it, but your books are about, you have your poetry and also your book kind of about, I would say, spiritual deviancy might be a way to kind of phrase it to a degree. But sure. Like you've never written erotica yourself, or have you?
No. So what I have is my blog. So my blog is The Deviant Diaries. And so this idea came from like, I had, number one, it came from the whole podcast idea. I've been doing this podcast in official capacity 1 year, but this whole concept actually started back in 2019. It's gone through a couple little evolutions since then. But right beforehand, I had started coming up with like all these, I was kind of like going back in my mind and chronicling out all of my like sexual escapades, like the ones that stuck out the most in my mind. And I came up with like 60 of them. Wow. And I wrote them out in like titles. So like basically they all have titles at this point. But that kind of turned into, when I shelved the podcast idea, it turned into like this blog project, which ended up, you know, will eventually be a kind of a memoir, I guess. But it's just all my sexual escapades and like all the, you know, funny, sad, hilarious, shitty ones, you know, literally shitty ones, some of them. You know, it's you have these stories that just need to be told, you know.
Absolutely. We've all had that one where you have sex and then the person starts crying afterwards. You know, it happens to. We'll save that.
We'll save that for another day, because that is a whole story.
A lot to unpack there.
I also still talk to this person, so I really shouldn't tell that story.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's all people that like I don't know anymore, or like even people that I do know, I ask permission. You know, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm gonna tell this story. Is that okay? Yeah. You gotta play it by the rules.
Yeah.
So you're new to LA. You're mm-hmm. from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get here and why?
It's largely been a dream. It's so unsexy, the story. It's been largely a dream that my husband has had for the longest time. He's lived in the Midwest for his entire life. We visited California a couple times, you know, and really loved it. And so when it came time, you know, like our goal that we've had for the last couple of years has been like, we want to move over to LA. We want to move to California, just anywhere, really. And then I got, after a while, I started applying for lucrative tech jobs and landed a lucrative tech job, the kind of which, well, you have to move to the coast. Also, we'll throw $10,000 moving expenses your way, which is like, sure, great, add it on. Love that. And it just kind of happened, which has been, it's been such a strange experience to, especially you know, as someone who used to be on Yahoo groups, so to move across the country at this period in your life, later on, sometimes I think a lot of people like it's a young man's game to just kind of move. So like that, but it's that thing where like our parents are in good enough health that we feel like we could probably move away for a while and not have to worry about large, you know, questions or repercussions going on. And so now we are here. It's been weird because a lot of kink scene people have reached out, be like, oh my God, I've been wanting to meet you forever and meet up. And it's, we've been here for about 4-ish months, a little over 4 months, and we've met no one. And that's, you know, it's largely because like, I've kind of struggled for a while with the idea that like, it's not like true, but I feel like pets and kink and like kind of like nice embellishments to your life kind of feel like products of privilege. Like anyone can have a kink regardless of status, but like people who are going to get sex benches and have leather and things like that, like there's a certain degree of like personal, you have to have certain sort of like, you know, financial affluence, stability in your life. Yeah, that not everyone is going to have. So I always kind of have to like check that too, where that's why I feel like having stories out there or something like that is something that people can connect to at relatively low cost is a big deal to me. Like it's that thing. I have my books out there online. I have like 6, maybe 7. I can't remember at this point, the books out there online. And I always like on the different tiers for the services, you can determine what the price is. And I always keep them low, like not like free, not like $0.99, because especially if you like a physical book, which I always like, I want to make sure, you know, there's at least something there, but I always keep those margins low simply for the reason of just like, I would never charge $20 for a book of erotica. Like, I don't just, it just never sat right with me kind of thing. Like, it's still weird to do your taxes and to be like, oh yes, you've made X amount of money off of your book sales this year. And it's just like, wow, I haven't promoted them, but I guess I have to, this is going into the old tax bundle here. Like, it's just such a surreal experience to deal with, even at, you know, whatever price point you set it at. But accessibility has always been a factor to me because I feel like people should have access to it if they're horny, basically.
Totally. And yeah, when I think of erotica, and we're going to get into what you're about, because this is a very niche thing, I would say.
Yeah.
But not so niche, is actually a very popular kink. But in particular, when I think of like erotica, I do think of like, you know, the my mom reads them a lot. She used to read them quite a bit when I was younger.
Like the paperback kind of romance. The
paperback,
type,
you know, not Shel Silverstein. What's her name? What's her name? Something.
Hey, where my sidewalk begins, baby.
But they always had them in like the buckets, like at the bookstore.
Yes.
You know, just the cardboard bucket. They're all like $2, you know. Mm-hmm. I would never, you know, and my stuff's poetry. Like poetry is a little bit different, but like, you know, nothing over like $15, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and those books, I remember back in the day, because I used to work in a bookstore where we used to have those kind of like old Scottish muscle man, take me away kind of, you know, books that have the very cheap papers on, though. And at the end of every month, you were literally supposed to just rip off the covers and throw away the rest of the paper because it's all pulpy. And you just kept the covers of just, this is how many we had left in stock. Like, that was the way that they did it. In fact, I even looked it up. There is some of those publishers for those cheap ass little, you know, Scottish whatever type things, or billionaires, husband, baby maker, whatever they are. Yeah. Like, you go onto their website and there's like literally a part that says, do you want to write a book for us? And it just gives you a guide and it gives you like a very specific, like, here's what we're looking for in terms of page count and what, like, it's like, it is encouraging to anyone of any capacity to try and join in. So it was always so wild to see that. But like, there, it is an industry, regardless of as much as people may dismiss it, or they might be selling for $2 or whatever. They pump out enough of them that they can just, next month they'll move on to the next slate of however many titles, and like, it will perpetually self-sustain.
Exactly, I would say so.
And anyone can join it.
Anyone can join. Okay, so let's talk about some of your books here. So okay. The lovely How to Be a Foot Pig.
Mm-hmm.
Explain.
So the thing is that when I was when you discovered that you have a foot fetish, it was that thing where when I was younger in high school, when I really started developing it, it was like, I had a hard time dealing with it because a lot of times I really wasn't sure what my sexuality was at the time either. So developing a male foot fetish specifically was kind of a weird like wrestling point. And for me, I like did this, tried to scientifically find out a way to go about it. I like researched it. And then when you realize that kinks will evolve over time, but scientifically people that have foot fetishes likely have them for the rest of their life.
And like, this is the thing is what I'm most interested in.
Yes. So, and part of it is because the parts of the brain that largely identify genitalia and feet are right next to each other. So there is that crossed wire happens a lot, which is why foot fetishes account for one third of all body fetishes, regardless of sexuality. Like, it is a crossover that happens. And so there are people that some people will still obviously just hate feet no matter what. And I understand it. I get it. But like, as soon as that, if that connection develops even lightly, even kind of, it's there. Like, it's never going to diminish. It can only increase, which is such a wild thing to deal with. And realizing that, kind of realizing kind of the more scientific aspect of it was a little terrifying because, again, at the time, I wasn't sure where I was at in terms of sexuality and the spectrum. But once I realized that once you have this thing, it is with you for the rest of your life, I was like, okay, well, I have two options. I could either just try and fight that part of myself and hate it, or I could turn around and embrace it fully. And I did. And the thing is, to the point where, like, it is just like, it's such a weird thing to talk about, but kink is like, I have so embraced it and so made it a part of me that, like, it is where my confidence stems from. It is where so many of the things that I'm able to do in life is because I just love my that part of me so much. Like, I really don't think of myself as too much of a pompous person. I can be an ass at times. We all can, let's be real. But like, that confidence comes from like the embrace of that kink of like just knowing exactly who you are, knowing that's a part of me. That's incredible. And so eventually I was able to turn that confidence into stories. Again, one night being on all sorts of different forums back in the day, reading erotica, being like, I could do that. And just one night being so fucking stoned out of my mind, I was like, I can do it. I can write a story. And like, just plot my, I mean, I've always been a writer throughout my life. And I just plot myself down, wrote a very short story. And it came out and I edited it sober. That's the key thing. As much as it was like, it's like, because like looking back on the page, I'm like, those characters' names switched like three different times. I got to stop that.
That's my but problem, like, is when I try to write stone and like sometimes it just I go back, I'm like, what in the fuck was I
who did
doing?
this? Because it wasn't me. But then eventually, like, I started writing stories, getting the response, and started putting them into books. Now, the first two books that I did, How to Be a Tickle Slave, and I can't even remember the name of the other one.
Hey,
But
I have a list. I
oh,
okay.
you do.
Yeah. Okay, we got six titles here. How to Be a Tickle Slave.
That was the
That
first
was the
one.
first one. My, What Ticklish Feet You Have.
That is the second one.
That's the foot crossover right
Yeah.
there.
Well, that, well, and honestly, that is a good stopping point too, because those two books came out with the publisher. And
Oh,
if
wow.
you look at the covers of the books, they're fucking terrible. The first one's actually kind of all right. Like, it's okay. It's, there's like a handcuff. There's some decent stuff behind it. But like,
Yeah.
the second one is just garbage. Tickling
The
some feet with a
feather.
fucking cat toy. What are you
Yeah.
goddamn doing? And like, I hired a straight guy in Chicago to actually model for what I thought would be good photos for the cover. Paid him and all that stuff. Amazing feet. And like, I submitted that to the publisher, like, hey, I didn't specifically say like your first fucking cover that you did for me was garbage, but I was like, hey, look at these great photos. I think you could probably use them. And they still didn't. I was so upset. And that was one of the that and also the fact that my stone ramblings that I thought I edited when they made it to market, actually, there was still a lot of typos and errors in there. I wasn't too happy about that either. But like, it was that thing where after that, I realized I had to w do my own shit, basically. So while Getting Off on the Wrong Foot was the first book and used the photo of that straight guy in Chicago, while I used that like for if it was my first book I published under my own name, my own graphic design, I did everything for that one. How to Be a Foot Pig, hired another model. It was both a collection of short stories as well as a longer narrative. I really started playing around with formats too, because when you are four books in to writing foot fetish kink-based erotica, you begin to play around with the format. And it's the thing where that particular one, it is not an instructional guide of how specifically to be a foot pig. It is a collection of short stories. But that still doesn't stop some people on Goodreads from leaving reviews being like, this didn't have any instructional material in it whatsoever. And it's like, y'all, I don't know what to tell you at that point. But like, it really was kind of a declaration of just like, I foot fetishism by itself, I think, comes with a degree of dom sub play, just largely because you are beneath, you are worshiping, or you are the one being worshipped there. There is an inherent power dynamic, I think, kind of built into it. Like, there is can be mutual play, but like, it's not in the same vein. So I think there are so many different types of subs in this universe. There are some that are full, you know, Omega, that just, please use me as a table. I have no identity. Please take away my rights, or whatever kind of thing, which is great for those people, not my bag. But I think the label of foot pig, which I heard some other people use other times, very specifically, there's this extremely hot daddy in the Carolinas named Barefoot Hunter, B-E-A-R. And he is just, and he used the term foot pig so much in our conversations. And it's just like, it's so perfect. It is just, you just relish in this very specificity of what it is and what it means to be called that.
And also, and it's just a kind of a confusing term too. Yeah. It's confusing as it is alluring.
Right. Cause like, you know, people talk about being a motherfucking dick pig. I think the thing, it's just one part over. It's just one thing removed. And I think so many people have, like, you know, posted it hilariously, or like when you start using combined words of, like, when I use the word foot boner, which is like a very specific phrase that comes up a lot in my work. It's that thing where it is what it is, I think, is just the definition of it. And I also think that you, as the writer, if you're not the one playing around with language, you know, it's like, that's kind of your job right there. Like, people will get upset over pop stars and pop songs, and just Pink has a song where the lines are, so what? I'm just a rock star. I got my rock moves. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Does it stay in your head? Is it still catchy as fuck? Like, pop music is supposed to be ridiculous. And I think erotica inherently, because of its nature, because of the scenarios that are out there, I think there is a degree of play that has to be involved to at least intrigue or hook or bring listeners or, you know, viewers into that experience. It's also one of those things where, in writing more narratives, I kind of wanted to replace kind of what was out there, because there was this one writer, Wayne Cortez, and he had written a full length book about, like, pure, like, tickle torture fantasy kind of stuff, which I was like, oh, hell yeah, absolutely. Set in an apocalyptic future, and, like, this one guy is the only one who he remains ticklish, and so many people want him because of whatever they can extract out of it. Like, it was just wonderful. It was like, it was this weird scenario. It was specific, so I'm like, oh, okay, cool, I can get into it. And then characters started dying. Like, people just, like, he got shot in the head. And it's like, well, I don't like this. I don't like that part of it. And, like, I wanted to have, like, a space for erotica that was, you could be degrading, but, like, in a hot way. No one's going to die in my books. No one's going to be violently rendered in any way. Like, I don't know, I just kind of, like, if there was not many other full-length books like that out there in the world, and How to Be a Foot Pig and the other ones were kind of as a way to kind of bring a more positive but still embracing feel to that, if that makes sense.
It totally does. And the thing is the thing that I love most about writing, and why I've always been a writer, is that there is a sense of play that goes with it. You know, whenever I was, like, devouring books as a kid, I was like, I wish I could do this. You know, I'm literally creating a world in my head. And it's the same kind of thing. Like, you have to have that kind of, like, number one, maybe a cinematic approach to, like, the way of writing, but you have to, like, also create the idea and, like, the fantasy that's going on.
100%. I mean, writers write for the same reason readers read, to find out what happens next. Yeah. And the thing too, especially when you're writing erotica, it's if you plug in the right scenario and you have the identities of the people firmly in your head, they just start speaking to each other. You don't have to do shit. Like, it's just like you can just start writing, and, like, oh, they're having a conversation now. Like, sometimes it just comes out of you because of the specificity of the environment. But yeah, it's that thing where so much of the foot fetish erotica I see out there is usually, like, a cheap 99-cent Kindle purchase or something like that. Like, it's just 20 pages or something like that. And I always wanted to have something meatier, something that people could actually have in their homes. When I first saw one of my books physically in a bookstore at Unabridged Books in Chicago, which has a lot of queer literature out there, like, that's just a brain fuck kind of moment to, like, there are physical copies out this in the world. And to still know, even now, even with more recent books, that there are physical versions out there that people have read, that people have on their libraries and may not tell anyone about or whatever. It's like, that is such a weird thing to still wrap my head around with, it to the point where, like, I should still probably write more. I haven't in a couple years, but, like, it's that weird thing where, like, my kinky Instagram recently went down. I know you recently had some guests on, app developers talking about the censorship of queer people in the media. Twitter right now is really one of the only places for, like, pure porn erotic content. Because, like, even now, I know you, with your channel, you're still posting on TikTok, on Instagram, but you still have to be careful about the words that you're saying. You have to censor the word sex in SEGGGS so that people understand that it's not, you know, like we're kind of skirting around it, but like that can go in a heartbeat. Something about having a book of yours physically out there that someone will have that will last longer and outlive probably both of us, which is still terrifying to say. I mean, that machine I sleep in at night, you don't know that won't work. But outside of that, you know, it might outlive all of us.
Did you ever read, are you familiar with Dennis Cooper at all?
No. Yes, I have.
He is an author. I have several of his books. I would say they're kind of like erotica adjacent. They're not explicitly erotica, but they do have a lot of like homosexual storylines. It's more experimental than anything because there's some weird stuff in there. But he's been a really fascinating, like, I used to just like read his books on my breaks at lunchtime, you know, and at my old job. And I was just like, there's just something really strange about this person. I highly suggest people, like, if you're interested in like reading like weird experimental borderline erotic stuff, he's great.
How was it experimental?
Just with some of the situations. And also he's a very abstract writer. So like, you know, things are very like not linear. Things are very kind of like, it's been a long time since I've actually read him, but he was actually one of my favorite writers for a while.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I still think you should get into the pure erotica space, but you know, that's only because I always encourage people to.
maybe. seeing as if you're successful at it, so maybe I should. okay, so we kind of talked a little bit about where the foot fetish comes from. And I think I also heard something recently. You said the part of the foot, part of the brain which identifies the foot is located also with the erotic part of the brain. I think is what you said.
With where genitalia is located. Genitalia. So it creates a very similar kind of response.
I also heard that there was something kind of like maybe primal about it because of the curvature of the foot. There's some sort of like body, like it mimics the curve of the body in some way.
I think a lot of that is baked into a lot of Freudian theory. And obviously Freudian theory, we can take different degrees of how much we want to treat that on there.
Right.
For me, it was never as much about, I mean, the curve of the responses, because I think once your brain identifies someone's feet, and again, there's different variations. There's people who love sneakers, people who love socks, and people like me who prefer bare feet more than anything else. There's just, once it kind of goes into that realm of erotica, it can take in every different form. Curvature is great, but for me, it's always been about that intimacy of it. And I think that might be more of kind of a closeted Midwest thing too, because I think it's just being around someone place when they take off their shoes, take off their socks, like when you're in mixed company or whatever, like there's a sign of intimacy to that. And since I always had attraction towards straight guys too, there is always kind of a private intimacy of someone would be willing enough to trust their body in a semi-nude state around you. Like it's all, you know, psychological, like, you know, kind of Trilby stuff, but like it that was always kind of the thing that I found most interesting about it. There was in Europe when the Black Plague was going around, people were afraid to have sex for the longest time because they were just afraid that they would contract it because there was such unknowable things about it. And obviously there was only so much medical science could do at the time. During that time, reported foot fetishes, as much as those things were reported, skyrocketed just because it was that thing where a lot of people, I think, wanted to find something sexual to attach onto, but because of the fear that was going on with plagues at the time, there wasn't really anything to do. So like seeing people barefoot and whatnot was a trigger. There was always that joke about, you know, like back in the day, oh, a woman would flash a bit of ankle or whatever, you know, like there was just that, you know, idea of a sexuality to it, but it was based in stuff because I feel like for a lot of people that were either conservative or just unsure of where their sexuality could be directed, it was an easy thing to kind of latch on to. So I feel like in terms of development, everyone has their different reasons, and there are feet that could be sexy. There's also people that love different types, whether it be dirty or long toes or, you know, like all the other different characteristics they're in. But for me, it was always more about the intimacy and the trust. And then there was still that fantasy too of just someone's bare feet or bare toes could be the thing that dominates you or makes you sexually submissive. That in itself was a hot enough fantasy to just drive that forward. So the shape is great, but for me, it's just about, I don't know, the visceral experience in a way that I wish I could articulate better. Yeah.
I will say that the few times I don't have a foot fetish, I'm not against it, but I the few times that I have had a foot, you know, either my own go into someone's mouth or or someone's coming into mine, yeah. It's always been a very like in the moment thing. It's always been very like, oh, okay, we're going here now.
Why not?
Awesome.
Yeah.
It has been fun. It's exciting if you can get into it. I'm pretty open in that department, but I just don't have that connection, I guess.
Right. And I think it's to that degree where everyone has a slate of kinks of which they are part of. And the thing I love most about kink life is that it evolves over time. It is never a static set of things, but you'll always have the things that you're definitely into. And for me, like, while feet are always incredible, I always feel like, and this could be, you know, we can debate about this, I always feel like the best sex is the kind when the foreplay is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's that thing where, like, the idea of a sexual buildup is, I think, so important. So people that are into dom sub play, the people that are into, like, any sort of, like, poppers or anything, like, before you actually reach any sort of penetration, if penetration is even something that you're interested in, is a huge deal. And so I feel like kinks really kind of amp that up to the point where it can be just like, the more desperate and horny you are, typically the better the sex is. Like, a hot quickie can be something, but when you integrate any sort of kink into it, outdoor play, whatever it is, that will always, I think, tend to amp up the sexual experience to a surprising degree. I even know some people who identify as sides, of just people that aren't.
God bless sides, first of all. God bless.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yes. People who aren't into typical penetrative sex whatsoever, but live in the world of their specific kinks. And that's fantastic. And I feel like there was a bit of shame that was kind of associated with it for a while. And I think very recently that's been finding a little bit more movement of just sexuality, because like the world of kink is so wide and diverse and just kind of everything that I feel like not being, because for that very reason, people have been more accepting of it and are more accepting of what people's sexual preferences are. And now to the point where, like, you know, if there's some people that just don't want to have just pure anal sex outright, fantastic, because if you have any use for them, if you have any connection with that kind of style, it's going to work out and it's going to be wonderful.
There's a lot of work involved in that also. So that's why I'm like, God bless sides. They take care of business. That's it.
They do that one thing so goddamn well.
One last question before we take a break. And yes. I this word has been in the ether for a little while. Gooning. What is foot gooning?
I have a separate account for this too. And it's a thing where I have, you know, in terms of developing fetishes over a while, I've been into chastity play for some time.
Okay.
And it is fucking fantastic. It's that the best way I can describe it is that there's this French movie that came out a while ago. I've not actually seen it, but I've read a lot about it, called Martyrs. It seems a little crazy. These girls escape this cult. They're adults. So one day they're sitting at a family. Bunch of nuns come in, shotgun everyone, kidnap the girls, whatever, and basically torture them with pain, because the whole idea is that they're a religious cult, and the more pain you experience is the closer you get to being able to see God. And spoiler alert, in the movie, one of them is tortured so badly they do actually get to see God and meet and get to say what God has to say. And then the person who runs the cult hears what God relayed and, like, interesting, and then shoots themselves. Feel good movie of the year. I think it's great. I think it. It's, you know, PG for what I remember. But like, it was that kind of thing. Like, I'm not a big pain or torture kind of guy, but I love the idea of, like, teasing erotica horniness being amped up to that level where you have a similar experience. That point when you are so horny, it does feel like you're seeing God, or you have that orgasm that is so overdue that, like, it just changes your chemistry, whatever. So chastity play for the longest time was like the matter of, like, if you go days without coming, and when you physically can't come because there's a fucking metal thing wrapped around your dick, it tends to really get things a lot hotter. And similarly, some people are just into edging, virtual chastity, not having a physical cage around themselves, of just getting themselves so horned up that it feels like they're going to shoot the biggest load of their goddamn lives at any moment. But gooning is very specifically the act of keeping in that state of getting so horny you get dumb, getting to that point of being just so dripping with pre that you just cannot fathom any other thoughts, full, smooth brain, everything's empty kind of thing, and you just stay there. And you just stay there for as long as possible. And that's kind of the art of gooning, as I understand it. I know there's a lot of people that really like the humiliation aspects, make dumb monkey faces with it or whatever, and create porn videos very specifically to encourage Goon, like, you want this, you're so dumb, this is all you can do. And also to go as long as you can without being having a cummed penis, as it were. Like, Gooning is just such an escalated version of just self-teasing, self-edging, that you just achieve a higher plane where you just become stupid and just a meat rod that is meant to be meant to explode in any moment. So that's what my understanding of Gooning is. And I created a Twitter very specifically of goon caps, as they were, encouraging things that are more foot fetish oriented, simply because, you know, I saw a lot of great gooning content on there and so few of it was about feet. I'm like, and that's always, again, be the kink you want to be in the world. So, you know, fill that void when it's not there.
Well, I have been thoroughly enlightened.
If you're watching this right now, go ahead and goon.
Gooning right now. Try a little bit gooning. No, I think I heard it from Trixie and Katya, actually. I was like, what the fuck are they
doing? Gooning in the bait shed.
Gooning in the bait shed. Exactly. I'm like, what are they fucking talking about? Yeah. Well, now we know.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I assume you brought a story with you.
Yeah. I have a few. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. All right, we are back. I'm here with James Medak, author of How to Be a Foot Pig, such classics such as Roommate, Faster Master Foot God King, and How to Be a Tickle Slave. I wanted to share this with you because this was something that came up quite a bit to me over the years, and I'm just going to share. Okay. I want to know what your thoughts are about
this. This is a trusting environment here.
This is a trusting environment. Okay. Sharing my screen now. For those on video, check it on YouTube. Do you know what this is?
You know, there's that thing where, you know, over the years, you know, I think Oprah once said that you train people how to treat you. So for that reason, people send me this kind of stuff all the time. And, you know, there are those that are absolutely into it. I personally am not. But I, again, encourage all the different flavors of foot fetish in the world, if they want to have a foot fleshlight of which to best engage themselves, that is... They are encouraged to do so. I mean, in the community, you know, like, foot jobs are a very regular thing. And yeah, since there is that correlation between, you know, feet and genitalia in the fetishist mind, like,
yeah,
having sex with feet is a supreme experience. It really is, like, you know, it can sometimes be, you know, life-changingly, orgasmically good. But yeah, I've never needed to go to that specific end. Because also on screen, for those who aren't able to see of all the different foot pussies out there, they're almost all female feet, which has not been my specific area of interest either. But I, again, encourage those who do to continue.
So there's many different varieties of them for the audio listeners. These are what are called vajankles. Vajankles.
Yeah, and honestly, I got to give credit to the name, whoever came up with that. That's just pure creativity.
It's very creative. So it is what seems to be a severed foot made out of silicone that has a vagina on the ankle part where it is capped off. There are other subsets of the vajankle where they have the vagina on the sole of the foot. And at various other places as well. I go you.
Right, exactly. I mean, for me, it's that weird thing, and I'm not sure how if you've been over the years, but it's that very strange thing of just, it's sometimes hard not to kink shame, because sometimes you hear about stuff that is just so outside the realm of anything that you envisioned to be sexually possible or attracted to, that eventually you just kind of have to be like, you know what? I get it. When people start explaining what actually is about the turn on, like, it really kind of helps a bit more. I was with this back in Chicago. I was with this guy, this large muscled guy who he wasn't much into kink. He was just more into regular sex. But the thing is that I think, and I'm not sure if he used trusted me or whatever, because obviously I liked feet tickling, edging, that kind of stuff. But he really wanted to be tied down and like have his nipples twisted very hard. And again, I wasn't much into pain, but like I'm not even kidding here. Me, unexperienced with this kind of thing, literally taking a wrench to put it down, and then to actually like with, very carefully as based on this reaction, lightly turn it, twisting the nipple to that point and shape of there. And the thing is that that time when it was happening, seeing his eyes roll to the back of his head as it was happening, it was like, man, you know what? For me, I have, like obviously kind of like tickling, edging or whatever, like is a sensation that obviously I think first, I is one of those things, like it makes sense to me. I think everyone would love to be edged. It's a wonderful, pleasurable sensation. But like for him, he had that exact same connection, but with pain. And for me, it kind of like made a lot more sense of just to have that external physical stimuli get to the point of just getting to release. So it's that thing where having those experiences, or having a friend of mine recently explain why he's into scat play, was like, your explanation of temperature changes and how that feels is very interesting. It's not my bag, but I appreciate you enlightening me as to the specificity of the subject.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast called Dying for Sex, and she there was a story about a woman who is actually in stage four cancer. It's metastasized all over her body. She's dying, but she also is embracing this whole other like sexual side of herself and like kind of getting more in touch with her body. But she Th this journey brought her on a lot of different kind of like kink excursions that she wouldn't normally find herself in. Otherwise, she found herself going on a date with someone who really wanted to get kicked in the balls repeatedly. And but there's something about that, like, there's the pain and pleasure signals are very kind of closely related in the brain as well. So that completely makes sense for me too. It's that whole thing of like, BDSM as well, pain equals pleasure for a lot of people.
There was for my bachelor party, I didn't want to have a conventional bachelor party, so instead I had a roast of myself. And which was great. And the question came up beforehand of just like, is there anything off limits? I'm like, yeah, I'll go at it. And especially for my straight guy friends who very well known about my foot fetish, they were more than happy to go ahead and go after it too. But one of my coworkers who I invited to it there, he was a really good guy and like breaking out to be a comedian in Chicago, whatever. And he's just like, and before you go into this, you should probably know I have a sexual kink that people are probably gonna talk about a lot. I think we should talk about it beforehand. He's like, okay, cool. Can I guess what it is? I'm like, you are welcome to guess whatever it is. And like, he thought I was into baby play. He thought I was a furry. It was the thing where I'm like, I can understand why you can make some of those guesses, but it was just very interesting to hear, especially from a straight guy, like what his perception was of any of that. It's always interesting to see what people think of you sexually.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, it's story time. What have
Oh
you
my
got
God.
for us?
Oh yeah, so the thing is that the story I have isn't hugely about feet. And the thing is that like the podcast you're listening to is Hookup Horror Stories. I wish I had something even more salacious than I do have, but for me, I've always been the kind of guy, because of the type of kink I'm in, because of the type of play I'm in, I always tend to vet people a little bit beforehand, to many people's frustrations too, because like sometimes it could be like I really want to get to know who they are before I actually meet up and do anything with them, because there is certainly a level of trust, especially if you're going to lock up your penis for an extended period of time or be in bondage or things like that. You want to make sure there's some degree there. But way back in the day, after college, I went moved back home, got my first apartment, and I was in the friskiest, sexiest city in America called Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh,
And
yes.
I mean, it's where I grew up, it's where it's from,
Where all the
like, and it
sluts
is,
live.
yes. I mean, listen, when you go onto the BYU campus to have a session with a guy, you walk in and you feel like every eye is upon you. It definitely is kind of an experience. But early on, I was doing a lot of dating on there. I think it was like OkCupid was what I was doing at the time. There was, a lot
Which
of
I
stuff
just
that.
signed up for last night, by the way, and
Oh, really?
I hate it.
Did you do
They
all the millions of questions that they want you to do?
I did 100. I love the questions.
Okay.
I love that part of it. But I don't remember it being $45 just to see people.
you know, the pandemic changed a lot of things in this world that I didn't realize the dating app industry would be so greatly affected where they need that. Is that like a monthly thing or just a one time?
Monthly.
Oh my fucking God. Fuck that shit. I'm sorry. I hate that. But like I was doing it and I was meeting people and I was having conversation with them. And like, there was that kind of degree of like, you have to be kink friendly a little bit in order, you know, to do it. And cause the thing is that, let's be real, if you're dating anyone at all, you got to be kink compatible. There are people who date and like, I'm really into this thing and my partner is not. And I just like, why do you put yourself through that there? Like, there might be other things, but I always feel like sexual compatibility should be a building block. It doesn't have to be the focal point of your relationship, but it has to be kind of a part of it. So I was dating a lot of 20-ish-year-old guys in Salt Lake City, Utah, and just kind of getting to know them. One of them, he took me to a Greek diner called Tickles, which was like, oh man, you smart man. I appreciate the effort that you put in. Like, a lot of them were trying out things for the first time, and I appreciated it. But there was this one guy that I dated, and he was just this a little bit of a quieter guy. Like, we got along fine on the chat. He seemed interesting there. And like, I'm like, you know, 23, 24. He's also, you know, of a very similar age. And like, you know, we go out to, you know, get some food. And he's just talking about how he's, you know, he's working in a nursing home and it's still like very close to his mom or whatever. Like, it seemed like a very, very nice guy. And this was during an age when I was doing the Salt Lake City dates, they were like 3 to 4 dates tops. And then I was out. Like, it wasn't like an asshole thing. It was like, after that amount of time, I kind of figured what they could and couldn't do or what I wanted out of it and what, you know, et cetera. But this guy was nice, you know, like just a calm talker, down to see movies, like not much of an initiative taker, but he just seemed nice and calm. And then eventually it came up to the idea about sex. You know, I kind of said what I'm into. And he was like, well, I'm very interested to try anything. I was like, well, that's fantastic. That's, I mean, great. Well, tell me, we're like at a restaurant eating dinner. It's like, so what have you jerked off to before? And he says, well, I haven't. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And he really, truly, at the age of 23, 24, had never masturbated.
Wow.
Not once, which the thing is that I couldn't, just for me, as
he had sex,
never.
Okay, so he's like gold star virgin,
100%
platinum.
Because like the thing is that like I know people go through puberty on different levels and different degrees, but like there's a certain age in which you know, the certain something starts demanding attention from you, and it's very hard to ignore even if you're confused by it. But for him to just flat out not be interested whatsoever or to not even approach that realm was just so fascinating to me. So it was at that point that I really appreciated the fact that he was talking to someone like me that seemed like they had sexual experience and, you know, like that, and wanted to kind of go out there. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, before we meet up again, would you mind jerking off for me? Like, I just kind of made the request, like not even like around me, but just like, can you just do it? Because if we do literally anything, I want to make sure that it is, you know, like there is some experience there, or at least some things. And so it's like, okay, yeah, no, I'm happy to try it. And so then like the next day we're talking, he texts me and it's just like, so I jerked off last night. I'm like, how was that for you? He's like, it was great. And then I felt shame. And I was like, oh,
baby.
Oh, you're going to get over that real quick, buddy. Trust me. We've all been there. Absolutely. And so then like, it was like, I think it was the third date afterwards, we were at my place and it was like pure dark, whatever. And like finally starting to make out, finally starting to kiss. And it was a thing where it was very clear that it was just kind of like this pure lust instinct on him. It was very fumbly hand, very kind of like, you know, kind of figuring out what exactly he wanted. He was very erect. It was very hard. It was in the, growing up in Salt Lake City, you know, like you get a degree of Mormon culture, and I understand that there are certain, you know, undergarments they wear for certain ceremonies that look very strange. I don't think that's specifically what he had on, but it was like the whitest, like creased sheet of like underwear I had ever seen in my entire life. And it was just strange to actually blow someone like that and for them to come so instantaneously, like literally within about like 3 seconds of just pure everything. You could tell it was close to a religious experience as they were experiencing right then and there, which was great, which was fantastic. And then they proceeded to like, you know, like calmly kind of digest it. I'm trying to do whatever aftercare I can to be like, you know, it's okay. Everything you're feeling is normal and great. Okay, it's like great. And then he went and said like, okay, I'll see you. And it's like,
You have to go repent.
Okay. And like very calmly, like got his stuff together and left. And I'm just left here like, what the fuck just happened? Like it was this reassuring thing to be like, I really was this guy's first experience. And I'm sure like you and the people listening here, they have probably all had some experience there, but being someone's first is still a very unusual kind of, like you have this weird sense of responsibility attached to it there. But contact immediately ceased after that. I never heard from him again after there. And it's that point where like there's that part of me that's wondering, I'm like, did they feel guilty over it? Was I just an accessory to it? But to be with someone who had never come and then to be the one to tell them, no, you should probably touch your penis probably for the first time ever, is, and then it's just an interesting experience. So like that's, it's not really a horror story, but it was just such an unusual space to be in, to be that for someone in, you know, in that capacity.
Well, you know, there's many degrees to a horror story, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, that it doesn't have to be like, you know, I shat the bed or anything, you know, like that insane. Or it could be something as similar as this, you know, where this guy just had a thing, you helped him work through it, God bless you. And then it just kind of ceases. I dated a virgin a few years ago, and I didn't know it at the time. And I was like, and he told me like, well, maybe our third date or something, that he was a virgin. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And at that point, maybe I wasn't like being like emotionally intellectual. It just took me by surprise.
Right.
At that point in my life, I'd never met an adult virgin. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, I talked to him about it and I was like, okay, this is a thing. And I'm interested in learning.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I just didn't have at that time the emotional capacity to pursue that because I need someone that has a little bit of experience under their belt. And he was actually a few years older than I was.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, so you're like in your 30s. And you have not even, I'm like, that long? Why? What? It baffles me.
Right. But also it's that thing where truly everyone's journey is different. Like I didn't have sex until college, truth be told. And it's that thing where, you know, when in college, I remember growing up in Salt Lake City, Utah, going to high school in Salt Lake City, Utah, going back and hearing about people having like, oh yeah, in high school, yeah, I was blowing them on the bus and we were drinking whiskey when I was 13 years old out in my parents' backyard. Like you hear all these things and it's just like, am I missing out? There's to a degree a part of like, you know, should I make up for lost time? And then there's the acceptance of just everyone's journey is completely different and that's okay. And it's not a full hookup story, but I will say adjacently, there was a time when being in Chicago and being high and being on Craigslist, you post some ads every once in a while of just looking for people. And there was this time where I connected with this guy who was really into tickling and like really truly wanted to be the full experience, fucking tied down, fucking edged to the fucking oblivion. And this guy was straight. And I was just like, interest, and like he was also, to his credit, he was admitted he was extremely intoxicated when he responded to my message, but it was like cool and glad we're in the same states about this too.
Yeah.
But he came over multiple times and like just he wanted the full experience. For him, it really didn't matter if it was a guy or a girl. He just wanted that, just to be restrained, to be completely helpless, and to have tickling flow through his body, to have that release, to have that sensation put over there. And it was a beautiful cock to edge too. It was one of those like drag, like seeing it fully hard, dragging a feather over the shaft. It's like, nah, this is great. This is fantastic. Like it really made me fall in love with cock more than I already had. But it was that thing where one time we started hooking up to a semi-regular degree where eventually got to the point where he's like, I want to bring someone else over. And I'm like, okay, sure. What are you thinking about? Like, I want to bring over this other, he's straight, remember. I want to bring over this other gay twink to integrate into the session. Like, okay, sure. I'm open and accepting or whatever. And, it was this other very quiet emo swoot kind of twink kid,
and he was exactly.
And he came over, and this guy, you know, he's a little bit older, but he's just like cool. We kind of meet the guy. The kid's energy is a little bit lower than, you know, a little bit more introverted, a little bit kind of judgy. I can't really be sure. I'm like, okay, sure. I'm like, he's like, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna tie me down. We're gonna tickle me until I come. And it was like, okay. And he I'm like, I have the restraints out. I'm tying the guy to the bed. He's getting, you know, relatively more naked. And like literally within 20 minutes, he's like, this ain't for me. I'm out of here. And like just gets an Uber and just goes. And I'm like,
bye.
You know what? I mean, credit for him for at least showing up, I guess. And also knowing that it wasn't his bag. But it's just, I don't know how the connection happened where it's just something he's really not interested in. He's brought into this thing. But whatever. I'm sure he at least had a memory to go over.
And that also speaks to like having boundaries and learning what your boundaries are. You're like, you know what? I tried it. I'm out of here.
Not for me. Listen, if they can have a tickle video subplot on Riverdale, anything's possible.
Do they?
They did. It was, I mean, when it came out, my fucking alerts were there, but literally it was, I think, based off of the movie Tickled, the David Ferrier documentary about endurance competitive tickling, which is not gay, as they say, even though it's totally fucking gay.
That's
gay. But it was a subplot where one of the characters needed money and was not going to be sexualized, but would be tied down and tickled for videos for money. It was, apparently this is a show where there's like blood cults and shit. So like, it's not too far out the gate, but I've seen a couple this recently of the most ridiculous Riverdale subplots, and the tickling one comes up quite a bit.
I will have to ask my friend who worked on that show. I will have to reach out and be like,
oh my goodness, yes.
Tell me about this. Were you there on this episode? I need to like figure this out. Okay, James, before I let you go, do you have time to play a quick game?
Of course I do.
Okay, cool. I love to play this game with my guests. It's called Red Flags. You've listened to a few episodes. Do you understand what's about to happen to you?
You say, and I've heard that question a lot. I mean, you're going to list a red flag and I'll tell you whether or not I think it's a red flag or not and why.
Exactly. That's exactly right. All right. So number one, you bring them. So this is a partner. You bring them to a work event and they start talking trash about their ex.
I'm probably going to be terrible at this game because like I just, over the years I've gotten more and more just accepting of how everyone's experience is just so unique unto themselves. And for that one, I don't know if that would be a red flag simply because for whatever burn or whatever they've been through, I'm at least sympathetic that they need to process whatever they need to there. If it's a constant thing, like going on like weeks at a time, they're still talking about their ex, at that point, it turns into a red flag. It turns into the, okay, you're still obsessed, you need to get over it point. But like, listen, people have had some terrible exes and some of those stories are hilarious. So if that's what they need to do and get out there, even if it's at a work function, not a red flag out the gate, at least for me.
I think if it was at you know, it was at my work function, I'm here with my partner and they just will not shut up about their ex, I gotta go.
Gotta go. Out of here.
Yeah, out of here.
We're okay. A company that makes boots, which is good because that's what you're going to be doing to them, booting them out.
The big red boots that everyone's wearing right now.
The little mushroom boots.
Exactly. Number two, your friend sets you up on a date and they tell you their entire life goal is to be on the cover of Muscle magazine.
Probably a red flag. I had to sit with that one where it's just like outside my realm of experience. Credit to them for having goals, but I don't see that. That's not my immediate line of vision. I'd have to say probably no on that.
Yeah, I would like, maybe, I mean, okay, cool. You have,
where do you call these from? Are these from your demented and deviant brain or?
No, so I have several games, actually. I have, I have this Red Flags game.
Oh, nice.
And I have this Deal Breakers, which I just got. This is Anna Faris's game, actually.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
Her podcast. But I have other things. I sometimes inject things in there. I actually think that one I pulled half from here. So like they brought you to your friend set you up on a date, and then the second part was from the Deal Breakers. So
nice.
They came from
it all works together beautifully. Not product placement. Yeah. But if you wanted to sponsor,
in the beginning, I was actually making them up. I was like just like
willy nilly.
Yeah. Yeah,
has an active axe wound. I don't know. That seems all right.
Fine. I'll fuck it.
I love your axe wound, you whore.
I love your axe wound, you whore.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, they rent an expensive sports car for your date.
Fuck off. No. Absolutely not. I'm sorry. More than anything else, that is just, That is just the epitome of being unnecessary. I'm 8,000%. Yeah.
See, I might be into this. I might be into this because I've actually tried to rent an expensive sports car for
For a
a trip
date?
to just to a trip to San Diego for a
Okay.
tattoo.
Yeah.
I didn't get it because I didn't take a credit card at the time, but
But you would appreciate someone going to that level of effort to impress you.
and if you got the money, then fuck it. Like, who cares? Just
Yeah,
don't be a douchebag about it.
you are open to be a sugar baby, is what you're saying.
I'm open to be spoiled occasionally. Okay, number four, you're on a double date with someone, and they bring their friend and their partner, who is your ex.
I'm fine with that. And I only say that because, like, I only have one other ex, and we get along fine. Like, I think it's just more of a personal experience thing where they'd be like, "Oh, great, you know, for you." Like, I don't know. Because I've been in only like two very serious relationships. Like, that's not as much of a deal breaker. We'd still find a way to make it party, you know.
Exactly. And I think he's like, oh, haven't seen you in a while. Let's
Right.
see you again.
Like, I'm just like, this sounds like a friendly meet cute. I don't see anything wrong with this. Me and my goddamn rose-colored glasses.
For me, depends on the accent, I'd say.
100%. Like that, so many of these are also like person specific too, where it's just like you will take out of this situation what you will.
Yeah, exactly. Last one, you are about to have sex with them for the first time, and they are extremely ticklish.
Oh, like, is there a green flag option? My goodness.
I don't
My
even see.
I think the thing would be whether or not they enjoy that. You know, like that's kind of the thing. Like, my husband hates being tickled, and that is perfectly fine. Like, I will not ever fuck. I mean, because it's that thing of just like, no matter what your interests are, you respect personal boundaries, like, at the end of the day. Like, that's a thing. So if that thing where if it's to the point where, like, and I've been at the point too, where, especially if you've been chastity for a while and everything is more sensitive, I've been to the point where sometimes your asshole can get ticklish. Like, it can be even from like light insertion, it can be a sensory overload. But like, it just depends if they're into it, then, you know, that's they're all about it then, you know. Green flags all the way, baby.
See, that one actually was a random pull.
Oh, wow.
They are extremely typical. So I'm like, I gotta.
Absolutely. 8,000,000%.
Cool. Well, this has been so much fun. I'm so happy
Yeah.
to be doing this.
I'm so glad too. Thank you for having me.
Of course, where can our listeners find you?
Not on Instagram anymore, as we previously discussed. At the very least, they can find me on Twitter at James Team Attack. And worst case, you can find me on Amazon, or at least my books are there. Just look up James Team Attack.
There you go.
But if you can.
Being here. What's that?
Oh, I was going to say, but if you can, get them through your local independent retailer too, because that's always the best option.
Support your local bookstores, that's right. Well, James, thank you again for being here. I had so much fun. I'll see you around.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Debbie. I appreciate it.
A very special thank you to my guests for joining me in this week's episode. Check out the episode description for all their information. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment, comment, and a 5-star review on the podcast. It really helps a lot. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel for video versions of the show.
Remember, subscribing might not be worth it, but it's also not optional. So just do it.